It's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
Yes, guys, I'm Si. Welcome to Cardiff City World. We are here for a quick live this evening. Five things we learned from Cardiff City 2, Southampton 1. The Bluebirds turn up against promotion-chasing Southampton. Not for the first time this season. Cardiff performed against one of the teams which are playing well, in form, going for that promotion and the automatic promotion. And they turned up with a bit of a patched-up team. Some youngsters in there, some players playing out of position. And we're going to talk about it. We're going to talk about some bits and pieces. We're going to talk about, obviously, five things we learned. And I'm going to put two questions to you guys now, which I'm going to discuss at the end, and I'd like to hear your opinions on it. The first question is, if we sign a number eight to play alongside Siopis and sort of interchange with, say, Joe Rawls in the summer, which I think we probably will. I think number eight is going to be a big part of the targeting and the rebuild. Does that mean that one of Turnbull, Rawls or Wintle would need to be sold? Or will they just loan Joel Colwell out and keep those three plus the new player? So they've got four options there. We'll talk about my opinions on it a bit later. And the second question is, should Raheem Conte and Kean Ashford start versus Middlesbrough at home in the next game? So I'm going to let you ponder on that and put some comments in there, whether you're watching on Twitter or YouTube, and we'll come back to those questions at the end of the... Well, once we've done the five things, it's going to be interesting. But good to see Big Rob Boyle back from his holidays. Done nothing this week. Been very, very... He just refused. Me and Matt have asked him to, you know, do some stuff, and he just refused. Just told us to get lost. Very unprofessional. But anyway, there we go. No, I'm joking. He's been on holiday, and I think, he deserves a break. Man does a lot. Doing a flower hour twice a week. Getting guests. He's a legend, as it were. But I have some interesting comments straight away. But let's get into five things we learned. I love doing this. I rewatched the game this morning after I did the breakfast show with Matt this morning. So if you haven't watched that after we finish here, go and check out the breakfast show we did this morning, which is just like an overall sort of review of the game, catch up and that. This one, I've rewatched the game, and you've got to break it down into five things. I tried to keep them positive, but you can't always be positive. But I think majority is positive actually this week. But let's get into it. Number one, tactically, I thought we were much better. We were more aggressive. We had more energy. We were pressing. We put them under pressure. Even in the first half where they go in 1-0 up, I thought tactically we were pretty good. And look, you've got players like Tanner playing at left back. You've got Romeo, who hasn't played a lot of football. It's going to be there's going to be difficult periods when you face a team like Southampton, who are in form. They've got a really deep squad full of really dangerous players. They play good football. They play attacking football. But in many ways, teams which knock it about and build from the back, I think suit us and the way we play. And we just look such a better... team when we press, and they were pressing together. We had a good shape still, so we were compact and difficult to play through, but the pressing and the energy was good. And I think the players like Tanner, I thought Tanner had a great game you know, he did make some positional errors, but you'd expect that from a winger playing left back. But I thought he gave us a lot of energy on that left hand side, overlapping, particularly when you've got like a Reuben Colwell on the left in the first half, who's not a natural winger. I thought Ollie Tanner did really, really well. I thought Romeo did well too. And I just thought, you know, the energy of Tanner on the left, Ashford on the right, enabled us to really, really press. And Keane Ashford has deserved a start. This shouldn't have been his first start. He should have played 3 or 4 games by now from the beginning, because I have to say, when you look at some of the performances that Josh Bowler has done, and I don't want to single him out because there is others, but just because he plays in the position that Keane Ashford started, what Keane Ashford showed in that 90 minutes that he played yesterday is that he offered the same going forward in terms of directness and skill and quickness, but he presses. He worked up and down that line, and as a team, we generally looked better with him there. Now, that's not to say we couldn't look good with Josh Bowler, but what I think it does say is that Keane Ashford deserves a chance. Just on Bowler's form, I think you could make a case for saying that, you know, Ashford's got a... I think he'd absolutely... Even if, you know, I expect Bowler will be fit for this next week because he had illness, I want to see Ashford retain his place, 100% retain his place. But we'll talk about that in the selection and stuff in a little bit. Number two, bit of a shout out for the academy and Darren Purse. Darren Purse takes a lot of criticism from certain elements of the fan base, particularly the online fan base. And I think what people sometimes forget is that the academy system and the under-23s, it doesn't really matter if the 23s win titles and games. Yes, of course, it's nice and it's usually an indication that you've got some good players coming through if the 23s are doing well. But ultimately, his job and the people within the academy system, their job is to get players ready so that when required, when you have 15, 12 injuries, whatever it is, you need young players who can come in and do a job. I thought Raheem Conte, you know, as well as Ashford did, as well as Reuben Gore, sensational, which is something we'll talk about in a minute. I thought Raheem Conte coming on actually changed the game a little bit for us. He gave us that outlet down the right, but he was also, he's two-footed. He's used to play in midfield. And he gave us that overlap. But also defensively, I think I said this morning, there was one ball where Phillips and Gutierrez got caught a little bit ball watching, and they kind of floated a ball over the top, and the left winger has cut across and he's in, and Raheem Sterling has tracked him all the way and then won a header Raheem Conte has come across and won a header, and like if he gets muscled off that, or you know the bigger, more experienced winger gets his body across him, he's through and goal. Massive, massive moment. And Raheem Conte deserves a lot of credit. Obviously, has set up the goal. But what you've got to say, right, is we've got Keane Ashford. We've got Raheem Conte, who apparently can play right back and defensive midfield. You've got Reuben Colwell, Joel Colwell. You've got young Giles, who came on. Like, that's, what, five academy players who are in and about the first team squad. Now, I think that is remarkable. I would say that the fact that Darren's a friend of mine is not what, like, I'm open about that. But the fact is, right, if we've got five academy players in and around the first team who are ready to go, ready to play, and when they've come on and play, and when they've come into the play in a game, they have let nobody down. And in fact, they've actually, if you look at, you know, Reuben Colwell's an academy graduate, very, very good performance, man of the match performance. You've got Tanner's not necessarily an academy graduate, but he's played, you know, he's been in the 23s, did very, very well playing out of position. Keane Ashford scores the winner, absolutely excellent performance. Another one, Raheem Conte, as I've just said, has come in, done a really good job. Giles came on, did a really good job, linked up well down that left-hand side for the goal as well. So all of those players are not just, you know, in there because we've got no one else. They're in there and they're ready to play. And I think certainly Conte's probably got a shout of starting if we, depending on how Tanner is, they might move Romeo to the left. And I just think that sometimes people want to criticise Cardiff and people, we're all frustrated at different things, whether it's the board or the football structure or the side of football. We're all frustrated at things, okay? And we're all reactionary game to game. But when you look at that and those players coming through and the players that are still to come through, I just don't see how you can be critical of the academy system and the people running it. I really don't. And I'm sure people will understand. People will, you know, come back and say this, that and the other. But ultimately, the under 23 level is not about winning titles and winning this, that and the other. It's about getting the players ready for first team football. And we have academy players now who are coming through, not just, you know, they're quite good. They're coming through and they're playing first team football. Surely that's what we want. So just, you know, shout out to them. Next up, number three, sign Nat Phillips. So I said the other day, didn't I, that, and I stand by it. Like, if Birmingham go down and there's any opportunity that Cardiff City could sign Jordan James, I said they should absolutely, I think I said blow the budget or something to that effect, probably a bit more expletive. But I basically said, do all you can to get him. And I stand by that. I would absolutely do everything I could to try and get Jordan James in. However, as much as I said this morning on the breakfast show, I'd like to sign Callum Grant if they could do something with his wages and agree a fee with West Brom, because West Brom want him out apparently because of his wages. But Cardiff, I think, would need to get his wages down. However, I wouldn't necessarily take him on loan next year. Because I would like Cardiff to be a little bit more clever with the loans they bring in next season. So it's a bit of a weird one. Like, if we could sign Callum Grant for a very reasonable fee and get his wages cut, then I would sign him. Nat Phillips, I believe, is on a free, although Paul Abbandato the other day said that he's got 1 year left. If he's got another year left, we should absolutely try and get him back on loan next year. If he's on a free, we've got to try and work out a way. If he likes it down here and he's settled, if he wants to come and there's any way that we can sign him, then we should absolutely do everything we can to sign him. And I hate to think where we would be if we hadn't brought him in, because Nat Phillips with McGuinness out has been phenomenal. I thought him, Guta, Siopis in the second half made, you know, him and Siopis particularly made three or four like last ditch blocks that could have resulted in goals. Thought he was up, you know, he's been outstanding. He's good on the ball, very good, you know, he's excellent defensively, been a real leader at the back as well, I think. And even when Guttas has looked a bit shaky in recent sort of memory, if you like, I think Phillips has helped him as well. I think it's really important that if there's any chance that we are able to sign him, we should 100% do that. I thought he was excellent again. Number four, Siopis masterclass. I understand and I agree that Reuben Caldwell was Cardiff City's man of the match yesterday, but Siopis was outstanding yesterday. Incidentally, like, I watched it this morning with no commentary, so everything was formed on kind of me watching that game. And I just, Siopis was so good. Like, the work that he does, unseen work, the amount of times that, you know, Ollie Tanner got caught up the field a little bit, caught out position, and which is completely understandable. That's going to happen if you've got an attacking left back anyway, but particularly when you've got a winger who's playing left back, and that certainly hasn't done it much. Siopis was constantly across covering him, and he did it in the, you know, on the right hand side, the left hand side, blocks on the edge of the box. He's always, you know, if the ball goes past him or through him or whatever, like, he's always, like, absolutely, like, busting a gut to get back into position. And I've said it numerous times, I think he's probably one of the best out-and-out holding midfielders in the league. But I just think if we can get somebody to play alongside him, you know, and I say again, Joe Rawls can do it in certain games. Joe Rawls cannot play every single game in Championship, two games a week at certain points in the season. He just can't do it. He's in the latter part of his career. Thought he was very good yesterday in the first half, Rawls. But I thought once Colwell went into the 10, I thought Rawls really became vital. And I thought he was, when he had those young legs around him, he became more effective in the game. But I believe, look, there's one or two options, in my opinion. It's only my opinion. People might disagree. Is you either play Rawls for certain games and then you play Turnbull in there, or you sign someone who's going to play there, because we need a out-and-out number eight. Psyopis was excellent. And when he's got that out-and-out number eight next to him and he can just be the defensive midfielder, he is so good. And, like, the work he did yesterday was a big part of the platform, which allowed us to press, which allowed us to play some good football, allowed us to be a bit more attacking, because Psyopis was just the defensive midfielder. He wasn't worrying about having to progress the ball or get the ball through. He just that holding midfielder, and he's very, very good at it. I thought he was excellent. I would like to, look, if Joe Rawls, for instance, can't play against Borough, I don't know if he will be able to. There's a week between games, so you might be fine. But let's say Joe Rawls cannot play on Saturday. I would love to see Joel Colwell in there. But realistically, I don't think the manager's going to start Joel Colwell on Saturday against Borough for a variety of reasons. I just don't think it'll happen. And I'd like to see Joel get some minutes, though. I would love to see Turnbull in there, because in those two cameos where we've seen Turnbull as the number eight against Psyopis, I think there's been one big difference between him and Joe Rawls. I think both of them are very capable of playing through the lines. Both of them are very capable on the ball. But the one difference between Turnbull and Rawls that I saw straight away in both cameos at that position is he was giving it to Ashford on the right or giving it to Colwell in the 10 and then following the ball for the return, because he's got those legs and he's got that energy to go and be the attacker. And I just think that Turnbull plays better with the pitch in front of him. He does not look comfortable receiving it on the half turn and with his back to goal. He just doesn't. Now, that's not necessarily a criticism of him. It maybe it's just saying that he's more suited to having everything in front of him. Fantastic. But let's talk about someone who is very comfortable with having his back to goal, someone who's good, comfortable having it on the half turn and in those little pockets of space. And that's Reuben Colwell. People forget, like, Reuben Colwell is what, 21? And I think, and I've been a big proponent of him this year. I think overall he's had an excellent season. I think he's really progressed this season. I asked Matt the question this morning, has he progressed this season due to the fact that he's training, speaking with, playing with Aaron Ramsey this year? So he's got, like, the Welsh captain, someone he looks up to, someone who's exceptional on their day. Or is that taking away a bit of credit from Ruben for the hard work he's put in? You know, people criticise sometimes that he hasn't got a finished product, and I've questioned whether that's... Is it because he's hasn't got the running and the movement off him? And I think we saw yesterday he created a lot of opportunities because he had runners. You know, the goal comes from him getting the ball. He has an overlap from Raheem Conte. He plays him in. Conte lays the ball in and we score. And I think I just thought he was exceptional. Even when he was not in the 10 and he was out on the left and he was kind of drifting in, almost playing a bit similar to Phil Foden's kind of role, where he's situated on the wing but drifting inside into little pockets of space. I just thought he was very good. But I thought as a team, Cardiff City looked better as soon as Reuben Colwell went into that 10. I thought Joe Rawls really came into the game when Reuben Caldwell went in the 10. And I also a big shout out, by the way, to Mate and to Jeju. Jeju has taken a lot of criticism, fair criticism, I think is fair to say as well. He hasn't been, he hasn't pulled up any trees and set the world on fire since he's coming in on loan. But he worked so hard last night, and I was happy for him to get his goal, because what he did is he pressed and he pressed and he pressed and he kept us on the front foot right to the end. And it created spaces for the likes of Caldwell to come into. But also, I thought Mate had one of his best performances in a while, particularly when he moved to the left. I've said before, it's difficult because going through the middle, I think his hold-up play and his link-up play is pretty decent. But his finishing doesn't seem to be like a number nine. But then also, sometimes he'll drop deep and he's putting crosses in to where he should be. Whereas I thought he was excellent on when he went onto the wing yesterday. And I thought Jeju did a good job. So I think, you know, maybe they've been enthused by having legs and energy around them, perhaps. But look, you've got to give credit where it's due. I thought they really turned up yesterday and had a good finish to the game. And I also, I thought, like I said, Joe Rawls, I thought had a very good game. But I thought once Caldwell went into that 10, Joe Rawls really, really sort of became more effective. Look, I thought Cardiff City were very good. You're going to concede chances against a team like Southampton. They create a lot of chances. They've got good players. They're in form. They're going for promotion. They need to win the game. So, of course, you're going to concede chances. So that's the kind of five things. But also, I want to say, Ethan Howarth, wow, what a performance. So many top saves, so many good saves under pressure. One or two where you're just thinking, goal. And he's just got something in the way of it. So massive shout out to him. I thought everyone overall was pretty good. I just thought it was a good performance by Cardiff. And I thought what yesterday showed as well is if Cardiff can give the manager the right, a couple of signings that he wants and he picks, that his style of football can work. It can be aggressive and it can be attacking. It doesn't have to be sideways, backwards, boring. Like, it can work and it can be aggressive. I think personally that we saw that at the start of the season, but you can't ignore the fact that since then it's gone a bit sideways, backwards, etc. Lack of movement, all the things we've discussed many times. But I thought that again showed. My only caveat with that, or question with that, is all these players have been available the whole time. So do you then have to ask questions of him to say, right, you know, why hasn't Keane Ashford been given a go? Why so many times have we seen different combinations in midfield which haven't quite worked and have made us really defensive? Why hasn't Reuben Caldwell been the number 10 the majority of the time? You know, why does he keep chopping and changing that? They're fair questions, because when we've had, like, when we had round players in round holes and when we've had the right players on the football pitch against a very good Southampton side, we've played some really, really good football. The passion there, the energy's there, the aggression is there. And, you know, I think sometimes people have misunderstood what I've said about Turnbull and being in that Rawls position. And I've said that he's more aggressive than Rawls. I don't mean he's more physically aggressive than Rawls. I mean that he's more aggressive than Rawls in the way that he plays with the ball. So he's more likely to carry the ball. He's more likely to thread a pass through the lines and then follow it to try and get the return. And I think coming from deep, I think he can be really effective. But it's whether the manager thinks that's his position ultimately, because he does seem to play him in 10 a lot. I don't know. I mean, what do you guys think? I know there's some people who don't think that Turnbull should play deeper, but for me, it seems obvious from what we've seen. Let's have a look at some of these comments anyway. I'm going to go to those questions in a minute, so we're going to just ignore them a minute. Jonathan says, supporters trust have brought out a statement after the news about the Salah case going to court. I shared it on your Twitter. I will have a look at that now, mate. Can't really comment on it because I haven't read it, but I will have a look at it. Thank you for giving that, sharing that. Paul says, Wintle, for me, has to move on. Sorry. Headless at times. Chases shadows. When Mate got to put out wide, we played better. Interesting. Reese says, certain posters have an in for Darren Purse. They'd rather the under-23s win every game and produce no one rather than vice versa. CCFC says, why hasn't Bullet been offered a new deal yet? Tan needs to sort this out. Yeah, 100%. Jonathan says, Purse needs to work on results at 23s as well as development. Surely a winning mentality is part of development. So good results would be better. Be a better look, even if a few youngsters come in now. Yeah, look, I'm not saying that the 23s results, like, they don't matter at all. But I mean, ultimately, if they finish, like, I don't know how many teams are in that 23s league, but say they finish like mid-table or four from bottom or whatever, but we get two or three players every year breaking into the first team who are out and out first team players. And maybe then you have the odd, like, one, which is like a genuine, whoa, look at him. I'm taking that, mate, you know? Like, I do get it, like, from particularly from the outside and maybe people who don't watch the games, it kind of, I do get it. But ultimately, for me, I'm more concerned with the academy system. So I did an interview before with a sports psychologist called Tracy Shanahan, right? And her job was to help footballers who are 17, 18, who have basically been in the academy system from like under sevens. They go up through the years, sevens, eights, nines, tens, all the way up. And then when they get to under 16s, they don't get offered a YTS. And their world falls apart. They got maybe some cases haven't got qualifications. And like, it's really, really difficult for them because they feel like their world has fallen apart. And obviously, we all know, you know, it's very difficult to become a professional footballer. But when you've gone through the ages like that, I think sometimes it can be easy to assume that, oh, I'm just going to go 16 and I'm going to get a YTS. But it doesn't work like that, because when you get to under 16s, when they offer the what used to be YTS, you know, when they offer the contracts, you're not just competing with your team. So say the squad now of under 16s of, say, 20. They're not just competing with each other for contracts to go into the academy or like into the, you know, the 23s. They're competing with all players in the UK for that age group, because clubs will bring in players from all over to feed in to make the 23s stronger. And I think you have to balance player welfare, developing players, producing players that are ready to play first team football. And I think certainly didn't see loads of Giles on Saturday, but I thought what we saw was encouraging and really good. But I thought Raheem Conte, for instance, really, I thought, caught the eye. Like, I thought he was really, really very good. He and Ashford, and it's not to take anything away from him, but everyone's been very excited about him and Joel Caldwell coming through. Like, you know, they're the guys, like, they're the ones that almost like the, if you want to say, like, just for a term, like the pin-up boys of the current academy group, you know, they're the ones who everyone's talking about. But I thought Raheem Conte came in and largely plays in midfield for the younger groups. Played a right back and did a sterling job, you know. Let's have a look. Paul CCFC Bluebird says, I think with the youngsters, we can't be playing them week in, week out. But when called upon, if needed via injury, I'd have no fear playing them. Yeah, and I think what you want to be able to do, mate, is you want to be able to bed them in bit by bit, don't you? So, for instance, just an example, I was saying the other week, like, let's give Joel Caldwell and Ashford 20 minutes off the bench now for the next couple of games with a view just giving them a start in one or two of the last home games. But what you would ideally like to be doing is giving them 20 minutes here and there, bringing them on if you're winning, bringing them on if you need a goal and they're like a forward. But so they get used to it, they can get used to the physicality of it and kind of go from there. Jonathan says we'd need to win the court case versus none to afford Jordan James, and we ain't got no hope. Yeah, no, look, the Jordan James thing is kind of like a tongue-in-cheek, maybe a pipe dream. My point being is that bringing him in alongside Siakam would be a great combination. But I understand it's probably not realistic. And due to fact what he's done with Wales, even if Birmingham go down, I think the likelihood is that he would be out of our price range, let's say. Reece says, job should always be about development of players rather than winning games at that level. Bellamy's under-18s won nearly all their games. Ruben is the only regular currently playing from that squad. That is a fair point. Fair point. Louise Wood says, beautiful football. Matthew says, surely if he has a year left, referring to Nat Phillips, surely if he has a year left at Liverpool, would want pounds, not another loan. Be bad business on their side. But if that happens, we could get him back and then I'd bite your hand off. Yeah, anyway, you can get him back, mate. To be honest, I would take him. But then, with his wages being so high, if you can't work out something with his wages, a couple of little options, maybe Kipre from West Brom at the moment, as he's going to be out of contract. I would love to have him back if we can't get Phillips. Reece says, I think a team getting relegated will snap Phillips up. Holgate's been a liability for Sheffield United. They've not really spent money or sold players so they could afford a player like Nat Phillips. Yeah, 100%. Paul CCFC Bluebird says, if Phillips was to stay, I'd put the captaincy with Ramsey and Phillips. I'd put him as captain with Ramsey as vice-captain. Interesting. Yeah, it was Brooks' chance with the Raheem Conte. Yeah, you're right there. If Cardiff win the court, that's an interesting one, Jonathan. Jonathan says, if Cardiff win the case versus Nantes, do you think Tan sells or invests? Well, I believe, and this is based on nothing other than, just my opinion from the outside. I believe that if an offer was to come in now where Vincent Tan could sell and recoup a chunk of his money in any way, shape or form, I believe that he would do it. I believe that if he could get out now and recoup a big chunk of what he puts in, I think he would do it. I think realistically, I don't think he has got the same, like, for instance, I truly believe, and I know people will criticize me for this and people don't like him and stuff like that, but I believe that Mehmet Dalman, for instance, regardless of whether you agree with his decisions and some of the things he does, which I don't, I think he wants to stay at Cardiff. And I know people will point to the Charlton thing and all that, but I believe, as we stand today, I believe he wants to stay at Cardiff and build the club back up and take the club places. But I question with Tan, I just think it's, I don't know, it's difficult to say, like, Is it a money, like just a business and a money thing to him? Because if that was the case, would he have kept us afloat when, through COVID and there was reports of him putting a lot of money in week to week to keep us going? So I don't know. It's a very difficult one. I dare say if you look at it from like a, almost like a sort of ego point of view, I guess, like if we could get back to a place where we're like in the Premier League and we're a steady Premier League team, from Vincent Tan's point of view, like I would assume that he'd be very proud of that achievement and sticking with the club and bringing it forward and the rest of it. So maybe he would want to stick with it and invest that money. But if reports to be believed and, he's losing so much money and whatnot with the football club, then it's difficult to not think that at some point he would try, if he had the opportunity to recoup some of that money, he might not take it. I don't know. It's impossible to say without knowing the ins and outs of everything. And it's the other thing as well, is you don't know like how much truth there is to those reports in terms of how much money he's putting in. Is he really losing money per month? Because I just think if he was losing that much money per month, keeping the club going and afloat and whatever. I just don't think he would do it. Like, he's a businessman, and you don't become that rich by just funding losing businesses constantly. So it makes me think that it's probably a bit of an exaggeration, but I have no idea one way or the other. Jonathan said, so it looks like there's some stories about the Supporters Trust and a statement's come out today. I will have a look into that and might do a video on it tomorrow. Reece says, depends what time calls wins. His 15 million back. I cannot see him getting 120 million, but I think the case is the only thing keeping him here. Once that's settled, he'll actively seek to sell. Yeah, and that becomes interesting then, because are Cardiff an attractive prospect to buy for someone? Like, us as fans probably think, yeah, of course they are. Capital of Wales, big club, being in the Premier League, you know, could be looking to get back. But is there a UK-based person who's got that much money who would be interested in buying Cardiff? Is there a foreign investor who would invest in Cardiff? You'd never know, do you? Like, Ryan Reynolds owns flipping Wrexham, of all places, you know? So you never know, but I think until that case is fully settled, it'll be difficult to predict what will happen. Andrew says, if Tam wins the court case, he's not putting any money back in the club. I don't trust Tam. We don't want to end up like Reading Football Club, where the owner is not interested in the club anymore. Yeah. Yeah. I'm not, not a fan, as it were, of the owner. I think FFP kind of saves us and stuff and income. But I would love to get Kipri back. Rob says, watching the Championship highlights this morning, and Kipri looked class again. Yeah, I loved him when he was here. As far as I'm aware, he turned down a new contract with them, and it will be available on free in the summer. I mean, I would love to see him come back, especially if, you know, if Phillips goes to a Premier League club coming down, or you know, stayed up. Like, what a replacement he would be. Reece says, loved Kipri. If I'm the manager for next year, Bowler's wages, Phillips wages, both saved. I'm signing Cody Dramer and Kipri on a free. Plenty of money left to spend on free. Yeah, 100%. You add Dramer and Kipri and lose Bowler and Phillips, I think that's probably good business. Rob says, on that note, so have you got a date for when Mehmet Dalman's coming on? It's a work in progress, my friends. Jonathan says, Dalman has more football knowledge than Tan. My four-year-old has more football knowledge than Tan. You ain't wrong there, my friend. Paul says, if Cardiff win the court case, shouldn't it be Cardiff's money, not Tan's, because he's suing on behalf of the club, not Vincent Tan's name? One thing, mate, which I'm not confident to talk about, is business and like money, the money side of things. I'm not, but I will try and get someone. I know a couple of people throughout football, which I'm who are very astute at FFP and the business side of things. I also obviously have had journalist Harry Harris on before talking about the Salah case, and I'd imagine, because he's covered it and followed it from start to finish in loads of detail. He's written books and stuff on it as well. So I will try and get in contact with Harry, get him on, and I'll also try and get some FFP experts on, so we can talk about that financial side of it with a bit more clarity and with, you know, some expert analysis rather than me guessing and saying the wrong thing and, you know, I like to stay in my lane, as it were. But Jonathan says to Paul in response to that, a lot of Cardiff's debt is too tan, so effectively you could pay the debts off over the money. Yeah, I think it's how many times has David Sullivan been linked with Cardiff's? Yeah, mate, that's been going on since it's like forever and ever and ever. Reece says, on paper, Cardiff, huge potential, yes. If someone was willing to buy Birmingham, Derby, Reading, have a liar bind up, we'd be a lot more attractive than any of those. You'd think so, mate, but you know, who knows, right? To finish us off, I asked a question, two questions at the start of the show. I said, should Raheem Conte and Kean Ashford start versus Middlesbrough? So let's have a couple of looks. Matthew said, if Romeo's fit, I think he has to start. Fair point. But he also followed that up and said, Conte definitely deserves minutes next week, but I feel if Romeo recovers from cramp, he'll play, in my opinion. Yeah, I think, like, Romeo didn't do anything wrong, but also Tanner went off injured as well. So you might have a bit where, like, maybe Raheem Conte was very two-footed, I noticed. So, you know, it could be a case that he plays on the left side of defence. I don't know. It's an interesting one. But on that, does Ashford start? Like, let me put it another way. Do you think the manager sticks with Ashford from the start, or do you think the manager will go with Josh Bowler if he's fit? Because I know what I think. I think the manager will go with Josh Bowler, which will infuriate people. But let's be honest, I think that's probably what he does. Although with Carlin Grant out, do you know what I would like to see Josh Bowler play on the left and Kean Ashford play on the right. Now that I could get on board with. Been saying all bloody season, play Ashford on the left. Play Bowler on the left. However, you've got to say Mate did a really good job out wide once he got moved. So maybe, you know, he doesn't really deserve to be dropped, rotated. So it'll be interesting what the manager does if a few of those players who were kind of half and half come back. Like, for instance, as I said a bit earlier, you know, if Joe Rawls is not fit to start against Borough, I have no idea whether he will or he won't. I would be absolutely gutted if Ryan Wintle was to come into midfield, not because it's Ryan Wintle, but because it's an opportunity to play Turnbull, which I think he should be playing anyway. But also it's an opportunity where you could play Joel Colwell. So it's interesting. Like, Raheem Conte, I believe, has played a lot of games in central midfield this season for the 23s. But I thought he did a really good job in left right back. But Jonathan's just saying, apparently he plays on the wing as well. You know, these players, they all tend to be flexible. And when young players come through into men's football, they tend to end up changing positions anyway. Like, a lot of people think Kean Ashford will end up as a number nine. I don't think physically you could expect him to do that at the moment. Certainly not the way we play. I think the way we play, you almost need a focal point. But I did come up with a little plan for that this morning, but I don't want to repeat myself too much. But I basically said play Colwell as a false nine and play Kean Ashford as the 10. So they're almost like crossing over. So you have Ashford going forward and Colwell dropping into the space could work because they link up so well. Jonathan says, I want Tanner and Ashford on the wings. Yeah, I would like to see Tanner get an opportunity to play on the wing now for the last couple of games. Colwell in 10. Colwell's got to be the number 10. Like, I can't see an argument for anybody else to start in that number 10 position against Borough. I just don't see how there's a discussion about it. And it was good to see Ruben get 90 minutes in his legs. I feel for him a bit because he always seems to be the one who comes off and he always seems to be the one who gets rotated. We always look as a team worse without him. But also, how can he be expected to get that match fitness for 90 minutes if he never gets 90 minutes? Like, it's a vicious circle almost. Paul says, I thought Romeo had a decent game, put some good tackles in, which was what was needed. Conte did well. Ashford, you just want him to do well, and he did. But like I said, let's get him hungry, wanting to play. Yeah, I'd just be a bit disappointed if we went back to the status quo. Like, I'm not saying start them all, but, like, I think Ashford, for instance, has done enough to keep his place. And then if you want to bring Bowler in, get him in on the other side and do it that way. But we'll do a proper preview of that later on. The other question I asked was, if Cardiff sign a number eight, which is, I think, likely that we target a number eight in the summer, does that mean that one of Turnbull, Rawls or Wintle need to be sold, or will they just loan Joel Colwell and keep them all? So my personal opinion is I would rather, well, to put it this way, I would, out of those three, Turnbull's coming in January, so he's not going to go. Rawls has just signed a new contract and he's the club captain. And then you've got Ryan Wintle. I think, look, from a performance point of view, like between Rawls and Wintle, Wintle's probably the one I would sell. And I think you could maybe get like $1 million, $2 million for Wintle. I think clubs would want him. Joel Colwell is an interesting one because I think it's quite good to have like a young, hungry option for each position who you can kind of rotate in, give 20 minutes here and there. But then would he benefit more if you sent him out on loan to a League One team and he played every week? I would argue that he probably would benefit more from that than playing once every 8-9 games for Cardiff. So I think if you sign a number eight, you could have that new signing, Siopis, Turnbull and Rawls as your midfield options. Let Joel Colwell go out on loan, maybe cash in on Ryan Wintle. And then you've also got Raheem Conte. Like, he is a player. I think Raheem Conte, you've got to keep in the first team squad next year because he's versatile. But he's also, you know, he's impressed, yes, on the weekends. If he can maintain that level of performance, you keep him in the squad because he could play in midfield, he could play fullback. Sounds like he'll play wing as well. So we've got nothing to play for in terms of relegation and things like that. So I would like us now to focus on next season. And this might change by the time I do the preview and I look at Borough and the rest of it. My team for Saturday or against Borough would be Howarth in goal, Romeo right back, Phillips and Gutas. If Tan is fit, then... And we assume that we haven't got a left back, like if Collins is still injured, I play Tanner there. Although you could make an argument for playing Raheem Conte there and put Tanner at the wing. I'd play Siopis and Turnbull if Rawls is not quite up to another game from the start. Colwell 10, Ashford right. Take your pick on the left. I probably think I'd lean towards Tanner and play Raheem Conte at left back. And play Mate, I guess, through the middle. I just don't think you can. I think it's too much to expect Ashford to play through the middle at the moment. I just think it is too much. Could you maybe there's an argument you could start Jeju, I think, but overall he's been a bit disappointing. So I know he did do well on the weekend, but yeah. Right, that's where we are. We've got loads of content coming now at the end of the season. If you haven't seen it already, check out the breakfast show from this morning and check out the interview I dropped last night. Full podcast, hour and 15 minutes, I think it was. Me and Paul Abandonato, journalist, Wales Online, for many years, covered Cardiff for 30 years. We had a real good, deep conversation about Cardiff season this year and Errol Bullitt. Personally, would like to see the manager stay and build on what he's already built. And it sounded like the majority of fans at the game yesterday felt the same way. But we'll be dropping all sorts of videos. We'll be going through the squad and assessing their performance from this season. We'll be looking at potential players that we can sign next year. We'll be looking at players that maybe need to be moved on for various reasons. It's going to be really, really interesting. Which players should we cash in on? Which shouldn't we not? If you've got any suggestions, by the way, for videos on Cardiff and stuff like that, then get them in. Let us know what you'd like to see. Because obviously, as the season finishes, we'll still be 7 days a week, but we'll be doing different types of kind of content and stuff like that. As always, it's a pleasure interacting with all you guys. Please support the channel. Please make sure you like the channel. Subscribe to Cardiff City World on YouTube. That's the biggest thing. I think we're just under 200 subscribers at the moment. Obviously, it's a new thing, and it takes time to build it and all the rest of it. And that's what we're trying to do. We're just trying to build. As always, thank you to everyone who's watched. If you haven't got your tickets for the Willie Boland City Legends night, click that QR code there. get your tickets. There's literally a couple left. We've got a big announcement on Wednesday regarding the next one. It's going to be a belter. If you want to be guaranteed a ticket, then make sure you're a member at patreon.com/acepodcastnation. Price of a bag of chips for a month, and you get early access to tickets. So Wednesday morning, 11 a.m., the tickets will be on sale to members. 11 a.m. Thursday, they'll be on sale to the general public. And it is a good one. Big up. Have a good evening, my friends. Nice one. Sports Social Podcast Network.